Welcome to Commons and Chronicles, the podcast where we talk about all the best Creative Commons and reusable open game license content. If you need resources for your creative writing, game design, or you just love lore, Commons and Chronicles is for you. Hi everyone, this is Klaatu. You're listening to Chronicles and Commons. Today I wanted to go through a little bit of the Dreamlands from Lovecraft again. There's a lot more to get through. It's a fantastic world. I've really been enjoying using it in my campaigns and also mapping it out for myself, really. And I figured I'd share what I've been doing here. So the story, I've been trying to do these grossly out of order, partly to avoid spoilers, as I mentioned, I think, last time, but also just because the way that Randolph Carter, the hero of the book, The Dream Quest for the Unknown Caedith, experiences the world is, I guess you could say, non-linear in a way, or not very friendly to cartography anyway. So it's, you know, he kind of goes through this world as one might go through a city. It's not necessarily the most logical way to visit a place. You just kind of go to wherever you happen to get attracted to next, and so that's what he does. So I've been grouping it together geographically or logically in some way. And so far we've visited the Enchanted Wood and that sort of countryside area where there's Ulthar and Nir and other cities like that, the River Sky. And we've visited the underworld, and we have visited the moon. So that's where we've been so far. At this point, since I'm going to start touching down on different geographic regions, I kind of want to give an overview again, which I kind of hinted at in the first episode. And the first episode, and this is probably all it really deserves, but the first episode kind of glossed over the idea that the Dreamlands is sometimes called the Six Kingdoms. And I really like the term Six Kingdoms because Dreamland tends to get confusing. I think it was the first episode. Now I'm starting to doubt myself. Anyway, the term Dreamland starts to get very confusing because people think, well, what do you mean Dreamland? Is this not real? Are we asleep? And it's really hard to kind of tell people, no, it's kind of like Barovia from The Curse of Strahd. You know, it's just another realm. Unless you want to play it as a dreamland where people are just asleep. But I don't think of it that way, and I get the sense from the book that it's not written exactly that way, although it is written that way. But it's more than just a dream. It's not just a dream. So, and the book says as much, so I feel like I'm very justified in saying that. Anyway, calling it the Six Kingdoms is kind of cool, but then the natural question is, what are the Six Kingdoms? So I've been thinking about that a lot, and I came up with a proposal for what those Six Kingdoms would be. One of them is pretty explicitly talked about as a kingdom, a proper kingdom, and it is called Kled, and it's an ancient but preserved jungle kingdom along the Serenarian Sea. So we'll get to the Serenarian Sea later, but there's by this large body of water, there's a jungle region, and it is called Kled, K-L-E-D, and the gods have maintained this kingdom in perfect condition in case they ever have to come back to it. So we'll visit that again. I just want to kind of give you some background. But that it's explicitly said that this is an ancient kingdom that is preserved perfectly since the day that it fell. The other kingdoms are a little bit harder to knock to pin down. So we've got one down, and then we've got five others that it's kind of like, well, this could be a kingdom. So I'm going off of a couple of different things, and one of them is the Leng is a very important land region of land in the book. So I think it's probably safe to assume that it is a kingdom. And we'll get a lot more into Leng in an episode dedicated to Leng, so I'm not going to talk too much about that right now, other than to say I believe it to be a kingdom. Another one is called Serranian, which is not to be confused with the Serenarian Sea. This Serenian is a floating city in the sky. It's barely mentioned in the book, but it is very explicitly said in the book that it has a king. And where there's a king, there's generally a kingdom. So I'm going to assume that another kingdom is Serenian, the sky floating city, as it is called. Similarly, along that assumption, is Uthnargai. Uthnargai is I believe it's a landmass, but I also believe that it is a kingdom itself. Or I don't even know if it's a land. When I say landmass, it's not like a continent. I didn't get the impression. It's just part of a continent. So I believe that it is a kingdom, and its capital city is a place called Silephes, which I think I might have mentioned briefly in the Underworld episode. Possibly not. Anyway, Silephes is a big, beautiful capital city, and we do know from the book that a king dwelt there. So again, same assumption. If there's a king, probably a kingdom. So that gives us a 1, 2, 3, 4th possibility for a kingdom out of 6. So the other two are a lot more sort of, I don't know, you just kind of have to think of them, and partly it's kind of by default. It's just sort of like, okay, well, we can assume that since the book talked about these places that they exist, and we may as well call them kingdoms. But there are some competitors, because the book talks about lots of places that we don't visit, so it's not like this is these are the only possible kingdoms. So these could be incorrect, is what I'm saying, but one is Oriab, a very large island with a very important mountain on it. It doesn't really talk about a leader or a king or a kingdomship at all for Oriab, but it is a very large island. I didn't get the impression that it was not governed, so I'm going to assume that there's a kingdom there. So for my 5th of the 6th kingdoms, I'm going to say Oriab. And then for the 6th of the 6 kingdoms, I am going to suppose, and this is partly what this episode is going to be about, is the area around the Okeanos River. But really, I'm thinking probably it's the area between the Okeanos River and the River Sky. So we were over by the River Sky in the first episode, where we, again, encountered Ulthar and Nir and even Dilithleen. But Dilithleen, since nobody visits it, maybe it's part of the kingdom, maybe not. More specifically, I think that the area between Okeanos and the Sky River might be a kingdom, with its central point being in a very important big city called Thran. This region, whatever it's called, the Okeanos River region, is to the north of the Enchanted Wood. So if you exit the Enchanted Wood, at least in my mind, and you go sort of southeast, you would hit Nir and Ulthar and the River Sky. But if you go north, then you would walk into, and when I say north and east and south, I'm just kind of using a map that magically just has directions in the sort of the way that we most of us think of it. Just, you know, north is straight, east is right, that sort of thing. I don't recall that there was a whole lot of data about sunrising and sunset action, so I'd never really got a feel for cardinal directions. So this region towards Thran is near the Okeanos River, and it stretches from the Enchanted Wood, from the north border of the Enchanted Wood, all the way to the Serenarian Sea. So we're going to talk about the land before the Serenarian Sea. The Serenarian Sea is enough of a tour for a whole episode on its own. This region is beautiful, though. It has a what they call the Singing River Okeanos on one side, and the lands are covered in flowers. There's groves and lawns and gardens all over the place, and there's a haze that sort of hangs over the land in such a way, just such that the sunlight, you know, it kind of retains more sunlight, it seems, than other places, or the sunlight is almost almost tangible, you feel, because it's just everywhere, and it's thicker than it ought to be. And when adventurers walk through this place as through a fairy place, they feel greater joy and wonder than they ever afterward remember. So it's that level of magic. And then to add to that magic, about a half a day's walk from the Enchanted Woods are the Jasper Terraces of Kirin, K-I-R-A-N, which slope down to the river's edge and bear a temple of loveliness wherein the king of Ilikvad comes from his far realm on the twilight sea once a year in a golden palanquin to pray to the god of Okranos, who sang to him in youth when he dwelt in a cottage by its banks. I don't know who this king is, the king of Ilikvad, and I don't know what the twilight sea is. He was definitely a contender for being one of the six kingdoms, but I'm not really sure if he's supposed to be a human or not. So I think it, and I don't know what the Twilight Sea is. It could be just another name for the Serenarian Sea. So it could be a king from Celephase, or it could be someone else, or it could be a celestial. So I'm not really sure. So the temple is made entirely of jasper, and it covers an acre of ground with its walls and courts. It has seven pinnacled towers, and I actually read that when I first read it to mean that its towers had seven pinnacles, like almost like towers with seven sort of peaks, but I don't know if that's what that means. It might literally mean seven towers with pinnacles. And its inner shrine, where the river enters through hidden channels and the god sings softly in the night. Many times the moon hears strange music as it shines on those courts and terraces and pinnacles, but whether that music be the song of the god or the chant of the cryptical priests, none but the king of Ilikvad may say, for only he had entered the temple or seen the priests. So in general, this jasper temple to the god of Okranos is a very good place. Whether, you know, what kind of brand of good is up to you, but I take it to be just a really, really good place, because it did specifically mention the moon, and knowing what we know of the moon now as travelers through this land, we know that the moon's actually kind of evil. So if they're comparing this temple's music almost as a ward from the moon, I think. So it's kind of, I think it's a very good, wholesome place. Beyond Kirin and the Jasper Temple and fields and everything are peaceful thatched cottages and shrines of amiable gods carven from more jasper or chrysoberyl. In this region, the Okranos is readily accessible, and you might catch a glimpse of iridescent fish swimming by. There are also, however, carnivorous fish here, which will attract birds, like just, you know, water fowl, by luring them toward the water, by showing, you know, the fish will go up to the surface and kind of hang out there, and then when a bird swoops down to grab it, the fish grabs the bird by the beak and devours it. So be careful of the piranhas or whatever they are. A great dark wood lies across from this region, from just across the Okranos, and its trees come down clear to the water's edge on the far side. Quaint lumbering buopoths sometimes can be spotted coming shyly out of the wood to drink. Now, I have no idea what a buopoth is. I assume it's big, because it says it's lumbering. So in my mind, I pretty much see an owl bear. Whether that is fair or not, I have no idea. It really kind of feels like it should be an owl bear. But buopoth, B-U-O-P-O-T-A-H-S, you could come up with something else. Buo sort of to me sounds like duo, so I kind of also want it to be a bipedal creature. But it's like, maybe it's a Bigfoot, who knows? But there you go, that's the buopoth, and it does not say anything other than sometimes they lumber out of the wood to shyly take a drink. Now, a full day's walk from the northern border of the Enchanted Woods into this Okranos region will eventually bring you to Thran. Thran is an ancient city, lofty beyond belief are its alabaster walls, sloping inward toward the top and wrought in one single piece by what means no man knows. It's that old and that puzzling, and it's huge. It is, most people just, they consider it impossible to have ever been built, and yet it's there. So it has 100 gates, 200 turrets, with clustered towers within, white beneath golden spires. The towers are so tall that people on the plains around the city see the towers soaring into the sky, and sometimes they're shining in the sunlight, sometimes they're sort of get lost among the clouds, and even other times when the clouds are lower, you know, you see the towers and then the clouds, and then peeking out over the clouds is the rest of the tower. So they're huge towers, and people from all over can see them, and they've got these great big golden spires at the top, which I'm sure reflect the sunlight just amazingly under the right conditions. Where Thran's gates open on the Okranos are great wharves of marble with ornate galleons of fragrant cedar and calamander riding gently at anchor. Strange bearded sailors sit on casks and bales emblazoned with the hieroglyphs of far-off places. Landward, beyond the walls of Thran, lies farm country, with small white cottages dreaming between little hills and narrow roads with stone bridges winding gracefully among streams and gardens. So it's quite a safe, happy-looking little spot. The city itself is guarded by red-robed sentries who admit travelers into the city under a very strict condition, and the payment to enter the city is that you must tell the sentry three dreams that are beyond belief, or you are denied entry into the city. I love this. I think in a game, I probably wouldn't make it three dreams. I would just three stories. You know, tell me three stories that's just completely beyond belief. And it would be really fun, I think, to hear what the players came up with under that demand. The gateways into Thran pass through the outer wall, which, if you actually get that far, past the guards, then you will find that the walls are so thick that the gate is a tunnel, essentially. It's I don't know how thick, but yeah, it qualifies as a tunnel. It's a very thick gate, a thick wall, thick outer wall. The streets curve and undulate their ways deep between heavenward towers leading to bazaars where the wares of the ornate galleons are sold. All through the city, lights shine through grated and balconied windows. The sound of lutes and pipes steal timidly from inner courts where marble fountains bubble. The lower city leads through darker streets to old sea taverns where captains and seamen gather. At such establishments, travelers may purchase passage on great green galleons along the Okranos out into the Serenarian Sea toward Seliphace in the land of Uthnargai. So that's what we've got on Thran, and that's pretty much what we have on that region. Like I say, you can kind of combine this episode probably, well, certainly with the first episode where we spoke about the region south of this area, sort of to the southeast of the Enchanted Wood. But this is what's north right up to the Serenarian Sea, and the Serenarian Sea is quite important. It's got a lot of lands kind of dotted along it that we'll talk about in a different episode. In terms of stats, there aren't really a whole lot of things to stat out in this area that we're given. You could certainly think of something for the Buopoth, as I mentioned, the big lumbering beast that comes out of the forest to take a drink out of the Okranos, but there's not really any data given about it, so it'd be entirely up to you. I think the really interesting things are the Jasper Temple, which begs to be explored. But as I say, I think that's a good temple. That's certainly the impression that I get from the book. So I think that would be more along the lines of a sanctuary, a place for healing or stuff like that. But I mean, obviously, maybe it's being invaded. Who knows? In terms of the god, it says that the king Ilikvad comes from his realm on the Twilight Sea once a year to pray to the god of Okranos. But it doesn't actually say who the god of Okranos is. And the villages around it have lots of shrines and temples made to benevolent gods of the region. So you've got a lot of potential there for weaving it into some pantheon. For me, I tend to use just kind of fall back on the Pagana pantheon. So Slid would be the god of bodies of water in the Pagana pantheon. And he is neutral. So that's not exactly the most shining example of good that you could get. I mean, it's neutral. But, I mean, that doesn't mean that his priesthood has to be neutral. The priesthood could be quite good. So it's not like I'm going against anything there. But you could obviously use any pantheon you want. And Lovecraft doesn't really talk about lesser gods like that. Like, gods that actually bother coming down to the earth and hanging out by the rivers. That's not something that Lovecraft really seems to be interested in. So yeah, I didn't stat out those priests by any means. And I guess you might if you wanted to play an evil campaign where they're going to go kill all the good priests. But yeah, I think generally speaking, it would just be a good cleric. Just any kind of pre-gen cleric could serve that pretty well. Maybe a water-based cleric. I mean, someone in, you know, with powers of the water domain. That would probably make sense. Maybe something nature as well. The one that might want statting out is the Red Guard of Thrawn. They're there to guard, so you never know what your players are going to do, right? So I figured that the Red Guards of Thrawn, I kind of based them off of monks, actually, just because I thought that might be kind of interesting, given that Thrawn seems to be in such a spiritual place. I think it might be more interesting to have the guards be at least like a brotherhood or something like that, rather than just straight, oh, we're a group of fighters that have been paid to guard the city. So the Red Guard of Thrawn, by default, my stat character is XP 700, CR rating of 3, lawful good, medium humanoid, init plus 2, perception plus 6, defense AC 16 with a touch of 12 and flat-footed 14. HP is 78, which is something like 12d8 plus 10. Fortitude of plus 5, reflex of plus 2, will of plus 1, which I think is derived from bravery. Offense. Speed 30 feet, reach 5 feet, statistics. Strength 16, dex 14, constitution 15, intelligence of 10, wisdom of 12, charisma of 16. Base attack plus 2, CMB is plus 5, and CMD is 7, which actually is a typo, it's 17. So the feats that I gave them by default, again, is bravery, which I think just gives them a plus 1 on their will saves, and deflect arrows, which is a monk-related skill, and you could pillage the monk portion of your player handbook or your core rulebook, whatever, to populate that with other feats. Skills, I gave acrobatics plus 3, climb plus 3, escape artist plus 3, intimidate plus 9, knowledge history plus 3, knowledge religion plus 3, perception plus 6, perform plus 3, ride plus 3, sense motive plus 6, stealth plus 3, swim plus 6. I figure anyone in this region is probably going to be pretty good at swimming. But generally, I wanted them to favor perception and kind of an innate history or knowledge of the history of the region, and probably not planes, but religion, because it seems a very sort of religious, spiritual region. But they're also guards, so I bumped up their intimidate to plus 9. So they're good at what they do, I imagine that they are, as I said, sort of a brotherhood of people who are sworn to protect this city, which obviously is very old and has quite a responsibility to guard this sort of almost a rare good place in this world, or at least in this immediate region. The deflect arrow's feat is from Pathfinder. It's Red Guard can knock arrows or other projectiles off course, preventing them from hitting their mark. In order to do that, they have to have one free hand at least, you know, something that's not holding anything else. So if they are someone with a great sword or something like that, then that probably wouldn't work unless they drop their weapon. And they have to be aware of the projectile. They can do that once per round when they would normally be hit with an attack from a ranged weapon. They can deflect it so that they take no damage from it. Must be aware of it, as I said, not flat-footed. Attempting to deflect a ranged attack does not count as an action, and unusually large ranged weapons do not apply here. So if a giant comes around and throws a boulder, then that cannot be deflected. Seems obvious, but, you know, you gotta say it in the rules. Let's see, there's also bravery. Starting at the second level, a Red Guard gains a +1 bonus on will saves against fear. This bonus increases by +1 for every 4 levels beyond second. You kind of figure that someone who specializes in hearing dreams or stories beyond belief must have some kind of guard against, or wall against, really, really freaky things that would make them afraid. And they're monks. They're trained. Flurry of Blows, that's the classic first-level monk, or maybe it's a second-level monk, attack that they can attack with a Fury of Blows. So it's basically essentially a two-weapon attack, except it's not two weapons. There is, when you make such an attack, a -2 penalty on the attack roll, but you get to strike twice, so there you go. They also can do Unarmed Strike, which again just kind of gets inherited from the monk. So a Red Guard's attacks may be with a fist, an elbow, a knee, feet. This means that a Red Guard may make unarmed strikes with his hands full. There's no such thing as an offhand attack for a Red Guard striking unarmed. A guard may thus apply his full strength bonus on damage rolls for all unarmed strikes. It's a pretty good one, and very, very martial. I don't think that Lovecraft probably envisioned the Red Guards as being martial artists. I just, like I've told you, I think it kind of fits, so that's the way that I went with it. None of my players yet have attacked a Red Guard of Thran, but I'm always ready for it, because they're guarding a city that players usually want to get into. A lot of that's adapted from Pathfinder core rulebook. So, if you go hunting, if you want to make your own stat block or whatever, that would be the basis for what I did there. So that's the Okranos region. I hope it's been informative. It's one of the places where it just seems to all be pure good. It's really hard to find any sense of evil there. And like I say, that kind of feels a little bit unique. Although, the countryside where Ulthar and Nir are, you don't really get the sense that it's super dangerous, but there is a very remarkable sense of peace and non-threatening surroundings that you get when you're walking through the Okranos region in the book, when you're reading through it in the book. And it might have just been because the story at that point didn't have conflict. That was the time where the main character was just walking to Thran. Not that big of a deal. But the way that it reads is that it is remarkably peaceful and almost shielded from outside evil. So that's kind of the way I go with it. That's kind of, it's like the book says, it's almost a fairy place. So that is Thran, that is the Okranos, and I hope that it was interesting, and we'll continue our travels through the Dreamland realm, through the Six Kingdoms, in a later episode. Thank you very much for listening. That's it for this week's episode. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Klaatu. You can reach me via email at klaatu@member.fsf.org. You can also usually catch me in IRC as not Klaatu. I'm on the Freenode network. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.